26th July 1984. Eugene, I have known you for 10 years now. As you know, I have always maintained that in essence, what you have been saying or things that you are saying is almost the same as what has been said by the Upanishad seers, the Buddha, and to what Jai Krishnamurti is saying. Except that you are using the contemporary language, which again, according to me, is true to the tradition. But apparently, you seem to deny this. We have discussed this on many occasions, but never in a systematic manner, at least with me. I would like to once again try to discuss this with you. But before we start, I would like to make a few things clear. Being trained in philosophy, my approach is going to be a philosophical one. Hence, it may not be out of place here to define the word philosophy so that we know in what sense the word is being used in our discussion. The word philosophy, as you very well know, has been used in different senses at different times in history. But broadly speaking, it may be defined as an attempt to understand the world and man's relation to it. Or it can also be defined as a worldview, as the Marxists do. Thus, a philosopher would, in his attempt to understand the world, raise or ask and attempt to answer a number of questions which he considers are peculiar to him. Here, as you once again very well know, the questions and answers of a philosopher are bound by the time and culture in which he lives. But certain questions have come to be called perennial philosophical questions. Some of these are metaphysical, epistemological, and ethical, which are also called the pillars of a philosophical system. In our discussion, I would like to cover all these areas as much as possible. Now, to start our discussion, I would like to begin by asking you an epistemological question, because, as you know, epistemology, or the theory of knowledge, attempts to see if knowledge of anything is possible, and even if it is possible, how do we determine whether the knowledge that I have is valid or invalid, correct or incorrect, true or false. So I would like to know if knowledge of anything is possible according to you, because if knowledge is not possible, that is, if you say something and I don't understand what you are saying, there is no point in discussion. So may I begin by asking you this question. Is knowledge of anything possible? And then we go on. Thank you.
As far as I'm concerned, it's very concrete. And as I said this morning, the problem between us is that you function in a state of knowing all the time, whether you are awake, asleep or dreaming. But I am functioning in a state of not knowing. But when there is a demand for knowledge which is only functional in nature, it is always there. It comes. I don't know if I can.
Could you make this clear? You see, my functioning in the knowing field and your functioning in a not knowing field, or whatever you are saying.
Yes.
How would you?
So you have got, you see, you are sitting in front of a tree, for example. So, what I mean by saying is that you know that it is a tree. I don't know. You know that it is a tree. So, that is the knowledge I am talking about. The knowledge about yourself, the knowledge about the world around you. Whether it is tree or sunrise, sunset, mountain, telephone, or anything. What I'm trying to suggest is that there is no difference between the outside and the inside. It is all one. So is it possible for you to function without knowing what is going on there, whether it is your feeling or the objects out there? So the knowledge is already there. And here I really don't know what I am looking at. I really don't know what is happening inside of me. Whether I am happy or unhappy, miserable or angry or bored or talking, it's an automatic thing. There is nobody who is talking here. So there is no knowledge here at any time except when there is a demand. And the demand is always from outside. There is a challenge. And when there is a challenge, the knowledge is there. When that challenge is met, then the knowledge isn't there anymore. There is no continuity of the knowledge. I don't know if it makes any sense to you.
But the knowledge, so, there, you see, the knowledge that we have all accumulated.
Listen, you see, knowledge is the totality of your thoughts, the totality of your experiences. That is knowledge. So, you recall a specific thing at a specific time, and so do I. And that you call memory. When I look at the table, and if you ask me what is it, I would immediately say it is table. So do you.
Yes.
I don't know, you are not moving the things. What exactly do you mean by knowledge? I really don't know. It's not something mysterious, it's not something abstract. The knowledge that tells you that you are a man, and that the lady that is sitting there is a lady and not a man. And I am happy, I am unhappy, I am miserable, I am bored, I am angry, I am free, I am not free, I am an enlightened man, I am not an enlightened man. That's exactly what I mean by knowledge.
Yeah, but is this all that knowledge there is? Or see, when, for example, the Indian philosophers talk of knowledge, they use a capital K, where they mean the knowledge of something that is not, you know, usually applicable to the world of the experience that we have.
I don't think that there is anything other than this. The reality of the object out there is something which cannot be experienced by me, except through the help of that knowledge. The knowledge that he is a man. See? So you know a lot more about him if you try, you see, to understand him clearly. You see that he is a man, that he is Jewish, that he is a businessman, he is a philosopher, he is this, that and the other. You see, all that is his knowledge.
And that is all there is.
That is all there is for me. And even the reality of that is something which cannot be experienced by me. So, the reality of the world as it is imposed on me is all that is there for me, and so there is no other reality. So even this is difficult to experience without the help of the knowledge. So you have acquired this knowledge during the course of your life through what is called the act of knowing. And when I say the act of knowing, what I mean is that you have accumulated these memories, you see, and the knowledge that is transferred to you, the information, and you have added to that information the concepts, and hearsay, and so on and so forth. You see, you have, that is all that is there. There is nothing there other than the totality of this knowledge that you have accumulated in the course of your life. That is what is called you. So, that is the only way you can function, and that's the only way you experience things. Without that knowledge, it is just not possible to experience anything. You may not accept that, but factually and actually, you have no way of experiencing the reality of the world in which you are functioning, let alone the world beyond, or some other reality, which all these philosophers, both East and West, both in the East and the West, are trying to imply that there is another kind of reality. So when this is impossible for you to experience, the reality of the world as it is, you see, superimposed on us by our culture, and there is no point in talking of the other reality, if there is any.
No, but the thing that I experience, are you denying the existence of things apart from knowledge? For example, you are talking something about knowledge preceding experience.
There is no knowledge preceding experience. It is only possible for you to experience things with knowledge. That's all that I'm saying. If the knowledge of the thing is not there, there is no experience. So, you use the knowledge to experience things for the purpose of strengthening and fortifying that knowledge.
No, but whenever I come in contact with some object, there are sensations which I experience.
Unless you translate those experiences within the framework of your knowledge, You cannot experience anything. You cannot talk of even sensation, because there is no such thing as sensation without the translation of the particular sensation in terms of what you know.
I may not translate.
And I don't use the word translate. Yes. You see, you are not even conscious of the fact that the senses are responding to the stimuli.
But are you denying the possibility of that phenomenon occurring in a human being?
You have no way of saying anything about sensations except when you translate them in terms of what you know and use that knowledge to experience things. So it can be proved in the laboratory that there is such a thing as a sensation and how this body is responding to this stimuli. But what separates the response from the stimulus is this knowledge you have of that particular sensation.
And that knowledge is the one that is responsible
for... That is passed on to us from generation to generation. And that knowledge you use to experience things, and through that experience you strengthen this knowledge. So it goes on and on and on. So it is not in the interest of that knowledge to let the sensations alone. It has to capture them within the framework of the knowledge, translate them, and experience them. And through that, this is gaining momentum, gathering momentum. That's all.
Was there a time when man was just functioning without knowledge, just the sensations, and just responding to the outside environment?
You do not even know that there is something here which is responding to the stimulus. See, the stimulus and the response to that stimulus is one unitary movement. Only when there is a space between the two, it is possible for you to experience that. Not as a sensation, but an experience which is the result of the knowledge you have about that sensation. So what creates the space between the stimulus and response is the moment of thought, which is knowledge. Then only it is possible for you to experience a thing, whether it is a sensation or the hardness of the object or the softness of your pillow or anything that is happening there around you and inside you.
No, I think what I want to ask was, you said somewhere along the line, man began to experience, became self-conscious. Till then, and whenever that was.
You want to fix a date of that?
No, I'm not. I don't want to fix a date, but I just want to find till then.
Till then?
Yeah. How was man functioning, if at all?
Fighting like the animals. Just like the animals. So what I'm emphasizing is that actually there is no difference between the animals and the species called man.
Was there complete harmony and equilibrium at that time?
When there is no division, there is bound to be harmony. And what I mean by harmony is the absence of division. Not the division between, you see,
two objects. The division between two objects is there.
That's exactly what I am denying. See, what did you say again?
The division. Yes.
The division comes into being only when there is a movement of thought. And it is the thought that creates the space. I don't want to call it the division, the space between the two. See, what creates this? That's exactly what I'm trying to point out. So it is the stimulus of this that creates the center here. There is nothing here. It is that creates the center here. And the center that I am talking about is not the big I or the big S or the small s, or small I, but the knowledge of that. See, the word table is the I, and there is no other I than the word table. All right. The word happiness is the I. There is no other I other than the word happiness.
The whole tradition has talked about an I and self and the realization of self.
No, there is no self there, there is no I there, and there is no psyche there, there is no mind there, there is nothing there except the pulse, the beat and the throb of life. Nothing is there.
So this has been made clear even in the Upanishads and some of the sutras, but man has always made an attempt to overcome the self or conquer the self or realize whatever the
that world. I think is one of the most foolish and absurd things that man has tried all his life to be free from that. See, that is, to be free from knowledge is to put an end to the continuity of the knowledge. And it is other words, it is the death. That's the only death that is there. The end of the knowledge is the end of you. The you as you know yourself, that is knowledge. The end as you experience yourself. The you there is first the knowledge, and then through the help of that knowledge to experience another you, which is no different from the you that the knowledge has created there. So it gives you the illusion that these are two different things. But actually it is one.
Actually one in the sense that there is no difference between me and the other. Well, that becomes a metaphysical...
To say that there is no difference between me and the other has no meaning to me. When once you pause it or create a thing called me, then there is the other. And this me is created by the other. And I don't know if you get what I'm trying to say. There is no me there at any time. The knowledge you are talking about is absent here, except when there is a response to the stimulus of the object out there, or the stimulus of the object called sensation inside. So there is no I there at any time. The I that is there is the totality of your thoughts, which produce the experiences. And the experiences in their turn strengthen that and maintain the continuity. That is the reason why you have to experience all the time. Every time you look at it, you see how to experience again using this knowledge. So it is a thing that it has to go on. Otherwise, you see, the whole thing is coming to an end there. So there is always a demand for more and more and more and more of experiences.
The knowledge doesn't want to come to an end.
The knowledge is self-perpetuating in its nature.
Why is that?
Don't ask the question. That is its nature.
I don't understand what you mean by...
The way it can perpetuate itself is to know more and more and more. To know more and more becomes possible only when you experience these things again and again and again.
If this body is intelligent enough to function on its own,
yes.
How come
whatever intelligence, whatever intelligence that is necessary for the survival of the living organism is already there, and there is no need for you to learn anything in that area.
So whatever you learn,
whether it be philosophy or religion or science or any technical tool you acquire through your education, is for the purpose of functioning in this organized world. There is effort always. Without effort you can't learn anything. Whatever is necessary for the survival of the living organism is learned in a sort of a subliminal way. No effort is necessary. You don't even know that you are learning something. So the intelligence that is necessary for the survival of the living organism is already there. So there is no need for you to awaken any intelligence.
Then how did, if that was there, how did thought take over?
The thought is action. So the moment the thought is born, the action is complete.
No, I mean, you said somewhere along the line, to go back to that again. Why did this organism allow itself to be dominated by thought?
See, the thought is integral part of the living organism. The thought is an action that is essential for the survival of the living organism. But you are using the thought to maintain the continuity of the flow of thought, which is knowledge. I'm not separating the knowledge and thought, see, they are one and the same. That's the only way it can maintain its continuity.
And how did it come to an end in your case, sir?
It has not come to an end.
The thought is still there.
It is still there. If the thought is not there, you are dead. The thought is, I am not living in a thoughtless state at all. The thought is there when there is a need for it, and the thought is not used for the purpose of perpetuating its continuity. That's all. So it is there for functioning in this world sanely and intelligently. And why should we function sanely and intelligently? If we don't function sanely and intelligently, we will end up, you know, in the funny form, singing merry melodies and loony tunes. So that's all, it has no other value.
But in which way there is difference between the animal and man? Because animal also gathers experience and has knowledge and responds according
to it. It doesn't use thought to become something.
Well, the leading dog of the group, it has somehow
the other dogs. That is part of the nature, so you are still an animal. That's the reason why you go and sit at the feet of the master and listen to all the crap that he's dishing out day after day, day after day. You swallow that and lick it like a dog. So you can never be free from that as long as you remain an animal. You call yourself, I don't mean you, maybe you say something extraordinary, I don't know. Only when you cease to be an animal, you become a human being. That human being is not the transformed individual that you are dreaming about. You see? Or an enlightened man.
So our thought system is the same as the one of the doctor.
You see, it has become more complex and complicated, that's all, in the case of humans. Mm-hmm. And that's all there is to it. I'm sorry, I don't know.
And because of evolution, the man is supposed to be the crown of...
No, that is also part of the survival mechanism. See, to believe in God is necessary, it became necessary for man to believe in God as a means of survival. See? So to belong to a church is a means of survival. Huh? Or you see, some other church, Protestant church, or some other political system, belonging, is a necessary ingredient of the survival mechanism of the humans today, the humankind.
It's a way of hierarchy, the same as the politics,
believing in God. No, but where do you draw the line? You see, that mechanism is protecting itself, you see, it's a self-protecting mechanism. Mm-hmm. And in the long run, it's going to destroy itself. You asked me a question that was probably necessary because it's whatever is created has to come to an end. You see, it's a speculation. I can't say with any definitiveness that was the reason why the thought assumed tremendous importance.
No, if there was complete equilibrium and harmony, why did it have to come to an end?
What?
Whatever there was.
That is not its nature. It is a short-lived in its nature, you see. So, the living organism is going through a process of living and dying all the time. And it is that is interested in maintaining its continuity. The demand for permanence comes from the thought. But the living organism is immortal in its nature. So nothing is destroyed here. Through dying, it is adding to the momentum of living. See, death is an essential part. The death of the body is an essential part of the living process. I don't know, remember, it's just confusion. So you cannot stop that. You have nothing to do with it. What have you to do with the body? You have nothing to do with it. It is like, you see, acquiring the... You are a squatter there. The thought is a squatter in the house. And the servant is trying to control the master, you see. So he's not going to succeed. Unfortunately, you see, if the time comes for the servant to quit, he would adopt what is called, you see, Scotch health policy. You know, during the war, you see, when they had to leave, you see, they burnt everything, the bridges, everything, you see, and then So if it is pushed out of its primary importance, it would burn the whole thing, destroy the whole thing. If you survive, you survive. If you don't, you don't.
So actually with our thinking process, we are twisting the body. We are just
trying to control something which you cannot control. That is the conflict. Yeah? The conflict is between the knowledge that the society or culture or whatever you call it is put in there. And not only that, it has created the goal for man, the goal of a perfect human being. And the nature is interested in creating a perfect human body and not a human being. And that's the conflict. So this culture, whether be it occidental or oriental, has done the greatest harm to the human kind, calling it mankind.
What is the nature of the perfect human, perfect human body? Body?
It has no use to which you can put that human being. It's just a flower. I don't like to use the word simile flower because it is too silly. It has some mystical overtones. Every idiotic poet, every mystic, see, there is a simple example of a flower.
So what would be the perfect body without being twisted by the mind?
It's already perfect. Nature has created one of the most beautiful things there. So you don't have to improve on it. You don't have to do a thing. You don't even have to bother about this. You're keeping it healthy. Forget about all that. Good food, healthy food, then you buy yoga, vitamins. So just for that. Don't trouble that body with the petty little experiences. This, the attitude, love, compassion. Don't bother that. It is functioning very smoothly, happy. It doesn't need all this stuff. It is just a pain for them in the neck, you see, pain in the neck, I'm sorry. Don't mind anything.
That's not a study.
No.
I mean, this perfect...
He's a philosopher, so you see.
Yeah, okay. We should really get back to epistemology.
Theory of knowledge.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, now you say that it's not possible to experience...
Try it now.
I experience what I think is the reality of it.
Yeah, but you call it. That's
I don't know. I'm trying to find out what you're talking about.
I'm telling you a very simple fact that there's nothing else there other than that, you see. And don't bother about it.
But without the knowledge, this is not a table.
What the hell is
it? So then what is it?
You ask the question. You don't know.
I don't call it
a donkey. I don't call it a donkey. For purposes of communication, we all have agreed that is called a table.
Right.
That's the end of it. So why should you bother about experiencing the reality of that if there is any? And what for do you want to experience the reality if it is functional in value? So if there is any other reality or not, that is...
Because when you say that one cannot experience the reality...
So why are you concerned, about, you see, or why are you talking of... Why are we concerned about, you see, another reality?
Well, because that sounds like another reality.
Yeah. No, when you say that, you see... No, I'm saying that even this, the reality of this object that we have been handling, dealing with, experiencing all of our lives, is something which cannot be experienced by you except through the knowledge. The knowledge is that is a table, that this is made of God knows what wood. And the legs are made of what? Iron? Yes, I don't know what. You see, that you can go on, see. Elaborate it and then try to add more and more and more to your knowledge. If you don't know, you bring a specialist and he will tell you something more about it, where this wood came from, which particular carpenter managed to create this ugly thing called table here, or the beautiful thing, whatever you want to call it. So you can add more and more, you see, knowledge.
That reality is something that I cannot experience.
No, that is all that is there. And what you call reality is nothing more than that. So don't even try, you see, to experience even the reality of this object and forget about the other reality. That's all that I'm saying.
So you are saying even the experience of this reality is not possible. You cannot experience this.
Anything.
Even if this is the only reality.
Yes, even this you cannot experience. Why the hell are you interested in or talking about the other reality? take that box
so then is the real reality
and throw him somewhere else.
So then is the real reality.
Yeah, is there any reality there?
No reality at all. Because there is no object there to the experience.
What is there?
So, I don't know. That's the answer. So how the hell do you know that you do not know? I know that, you see, that's the logic. You see, you do not want that logical thinking to be blocked there. So then you see these questions which you think are very logical, rational and clever are not there. So it is this question that separates you from the object, and then you see you play this game of wanting to experience that first, which is possible only through the help of this knowledge, and then ask another idiotic question, is that real and what is it? You see, it's all right, sit in the classroom and discuss forever and what is the reality of the object that is sitting there. First, the moment you say that the object, you are in trouble. Is it a table or a chair or a donkey?
This is what mystifies the whole thing, when you say you cannot experience that without knowledge.
Which is
supposing I have no knowledge, then there is something else.
There is no supposing, you see. What is supposing, you see?
No, you see, the implication
the question which you are asking is absurd, because there is a supposition there, if there, that is the problem. So, supposing, you see, gives room for your speculation. And thereby it has provided the material for you to become a philosopher. And to use that to make a living.
No, but whatever you are saying,
that is not your fault.
No.
That is not your fault.
The implication of what you say is that there is something which I am not experiencing.
It is the knowledge that says that there is something. First, number one statement. You understand?
Yes.
So, it is the same knowledge that goes one step further and says that that is a table. It is the same knowledge that goes another step and says that that is a wooden table and not an iron table.
That is clear.
That it goes on and on and on and on.
Now what about, let's take a few steps backwards.
You come to the point where the supposition comes to an end. And so that is the end of the whole story.
Okay, before the knowledge says that there is an object,
what
you
mean
to say there is no separation of this
exactly.
From the background.
Exactly. So okay. It is the thought
so
that
there
comes
has never been a single thing.
Never. So it has been. It is the thought that comes in, which is a question, and then separates you from what you call an object, and creates two things there. Mm-hmm. And so that is the I that I am talking about. The thought is the I. So in relationship with that center, you create the things around it. There was no thought there, then you say, I know your question, how do you know that the thought was not there? So that's the crux of the problem. That is why I say there is no way you and I can carry on any dialogue, any conversation on any level, except as you see, a person who is ready to accept what I am saying as an act of faith. So you enter the area of religion, you see. And that is how the religious man has perpetrated this for centuries.
But all those religious people who had those experiences,
they listen, you see, you just don't have the guts to say all of them are wrong. It does not mean that I am saying I am the only one who is right. No, I am the top dog, I am the one that has descended from heaven. You see, the whole world has created me for the main purpose of saving the whole world from all the religious teachers. Not at all. So there is somehow this courage, you know, not true courage, you see, I stumbled into this, but what is there can be described as courage, because the entire past has been somehow, through some strange chance or through some luck, has been fought out. And so, no power in the world can touch that certainty in me. And this certainty I cannot possess.
And it can't be acquired by faith.
Not at all. You are lost body and soul. I'm sorry to say the word soul, but that's one of the idioms, idiotic, mystical language.
of the religion of the sciences,
running so fast to keep ourselves where we are.
Sorry.